So this is Dharma Talk number 4 for Rohatsu Sishin 2017. And I'd like to take up a little bit with the section that I read on Monday, and I didn't really talk about it. I just kind of left you with the straight Dogen with no comment. So I'd like to read it again and make a few comments. So Dogen says, "Do not take up the Buddha measure and analyze the great way. The Buddha measure is one step, just like an open blossom. Do not hold out the mind measure to grope for and deliberate about the awesome presence. The mind measure is a single face, like the world. The measure of a single blade of grass is clearly the measure of the Buddha ancestor mind, one blade that recognizes the whereabouts of active Buddhas. Even if you recognize one mind measure encompasses innumerable Buddha measures, when you try to measure the active Buddha's appearance by the motion and stillness of their visage, it is undoubtedly beyond measure. Since their conduct is beyond measure, measuring does not hit the mark, is not useful, and cannot be gauged." So really the last part is probably the most important thing we need to know, even if we don't understand the poetry of the rest. It's like just the part about measuring does not hit the mark and is not useful and cannot be gauged. But I'll still talk a little bit about the other stuff he said, because I think it's pretty wondrous. So the Buddha measure is one step, just like an open blossom. And one of the footnotes says, in other words, it's one physical phenomena or one sign of spring, one open blossom. So not, right now isn't a time we're thinking about spring so much, but after, you know, winter and a lot of dead, and then when there's just one, you see one blossom opening. Of course, it's wonderful, but it's one thing. It's not the whole. It's not all of spring. What is spring anyway? We can't say, but there's the one blossom, which is one sign, one physical phenomena. And he talks about a Buddha measure and a mind measure. And sometimes I think those are synonymous, and other times I think he's talking about two different things. And maybe he's doing both at the same time. But the Buddha measure, I thought about that. The Buddha measure, what might that be? A Buddha measure might be like he immediately attained enlightenment or instantly attained enlightenment. That's a Buddha measure. It's a measure. We say something. We say he attained enlightenment. So we seem to be measuring something. We seem to be saying something about that that's a measure. But on the other hand, even if we say that, we shouldn't worry about it, because it's just one step. It's just one blossom. So he says, don't grope for and deliberate about the awesome presence. So when I reflected on that, I said, well, I probably shouldn't even be talking at all. Then he says, the mind measure is a single face, like the world.
A single face,
like the world. So I think one idea is that it might be referencing, like, again, the face of a flower, right? A face. But then also, it's like, that's the whole world. A single face. And this line about the flower and the world also appears in the fascicle Kuge, which is flowers in space or flowers in the sky, which is that your name, your Dharma name, Lillian, Kuge. So flowers, or flowers in emptiness is another. of emptiness, in emptiness, of emptiness. So yeah, for you it's of emptiness, but I'm saying the different translations of that fascicle. Sometimes it's translated as flowers in space, or flowers in the sky, or flowers in emptiness, or of emptiness, yeah. And in that fascicle, there's a line that says, flowers opening are the occurrence of the world. Flowers opening are the occurrence of the world. So here when he says, the mind measure is a single face, I see this flower opening, like the world. It's the occurrence of the world, and it's the whole world. And so it's large and small at the same time, so which is another way of kind of getting at, how is this measure working out then? Then there's this line, the measure of a single blade of grass is clearly the measure of the Buddha ancestor mind. One blade that recognizes the whereabouts of active Buddhas. So that's the Kaz Ta-Nehisi translation. The Nishijima and Cross translation says, consideration by a stalk of grass, like here's a stalk of grass considering, consideration by a stalk of grass evidently is consideration by the mind of the Buddha patriarchs. So that I kind of like, because it says like our mind trying to consider the Buddha patriarchs is like a blade of grass trying to consider. Then it goes on to say, it is a fragment in which acting Buddha has already recognized its own footprint. And when I read more different translations and thought more about this, is my understanding of that. So if our mind tries to consider and measure the awesome presence of active Buddhas, it's like a stalk of grass considering the Buddha. And an active Buddha who is walking along, maybe through the grass, can recognize its own footprint in the grass. But the grass perhaps is not so sure what happened there. So something happened. It got bent somehow. Something happened. But what was that? So that's like our mind. And maybe ouch, too, yeah. Although I think grass is pretty pliable. It bends. So what I've been wondering is, can we take up the practice? I'm wondering this for myself as well as others. Can we take up the practice of developing our concentration in meditation without measuring?
Without what?
Measuring. Ah. Without measuring. And so for those of us with analytical type minds, it's very difficult. Because as soon as we take up a task, then we want to be evaluating how are we doing. I mean, that's probably true for lots of people, although I think some people have an easier time sort of being in the flow of things. So I don't want to say that everyone is like me. But I think for a lot of us, that measuring tendency that comes in right away. If we try to do something, then we want to say, and did we do it? And there's some usefulness in that in many realms, right? So we get a lot of support for developing that kind of mind. But it really gets in the way of practice of the Buddha way. It really does get in the way if we're always measuring. So, you know, we hear instructions like Katagiri Roshi saying, what happens in zazen is none of your business. What happens in your zazen is none of your business. But I do think it's actually possible to develop concentration and let, maybe you could say, let go of measuring. So measuring could come up. It could come up again and again, and then you say, okay, yeah, I can see this isn't useful. And here it is again, and okay, let go again. All right, so Dogen goes on in the next passage to say something more about investigating. And this is kind of a long passage, but I think I'm going to read the whole thing through and then we'll see how far we get today. Now, there is another point for investigating the awesome presence of active Buddhas. When Buddha is none other than the self, comes thus, the awesome presence of I am like this and you are also like this indicates I alone know this. Yet the dropping away of the Buddhas in the 10 directions are also like this is not only the single avenue. So this is a reference to stuff that he talked about earlier about the I am like this, you are like this, all the Buddhas and ancestors are also like this, so we're not separate. So now he's saying something about that, and he's saying, okay, well, that's true, but it's not the only thing. There's something else we can say about that. Accordingly, an old Buddha, Hongzhi Zhengzhou, said, reach over to grasp what's there and bring its workings right here. When you take on sustaining this, all things, bodies, actions, and Buddhas become intimate with you. These actions, things, bodies, and Buddhas are simply immersed or covered in acceptance. Because they are simply covered in acceptance, through acceptance, they are just dropped off. The covered eye is the radiance of 100 grass tips.
E-I-E?
E-I-E, the covered eye. So like, I can't see anything. The covered eye is the radiance of 100 grass tips. Do not be swayed into thinking that it does not see one thing, does not see a single matter. The covered eye reaches this thing and that thing. Throughout journeys, while taking on coming and going, or while leaving and entering by the same gate, nothing is hidden in the entire world. And so, the world honors honored ones' intimate language, intimate realization, intimate practice, and intimate entrustment are present. Leaving the gate, there is grass. Entering the gate, there is grass. Though there is not a bit of grass for myriad miles. Such entering and leaving are not essential. Grasping by entering does not wait for the letting go of leaving. These are mere apparitions of blossoms in the sky. Who would regard this apparition of blossoms in the sky as taking up a mistake and settling in with the mistake? Stepping forward misses, stepping backward misses, taking one step misses, taking two steps misses, and so there are mistakes upon mistakes. So that's kind of a lot. Whew. So grasp what's there and bring its workings right here. Usually we're not told to grasp things. Another translation says, work with rights there. Come back to this concrete place and act. So that's what it is. It's just be here now. If you're off there, you've wandered off somewhere, you might say, come back. Because it's really here anyway, so grasp. work with what is right there in front of you. Bring it here. Bring it in front of your face. And so that can be the habit patterns that we're seeing in ourselves that we might be working with. It can be seeing relationship dynamics or family dynamics with the holidays coming up, you know. Can be larger issues like racism and white privilege. Yeah. Seeing that. Effects of climate change and what action might be needed. Seeing that. And Dogen says, when you take this on, this bringing it right here, then all things, bodies, actions, and Buddhas become intimate with you. Nice. These actions, things, bodies, and Buddhas are simply covered or immersed in acceptance. That's really nice. So that's not saying I have to accept it. It's saying if I bring it right here, then those things become intimate with me and are covered in acceptance. So it's sort of a different... It's not like the energy of the acceptance isn't only coming from me. It's happening together. There's some activity or effort on my part of seeing it, but then the acceptance part is dynamically interacting. And that's really radical acceptance. So in our minds and in our worlds, it's accepting this is happening. This is what is happening. Racism or climate change or sexual harassment or somebody saying something we don't like or that's what's happening. That's the bringing it right here. Oh, this is what's happening. Let me really see it. And then that acceptance flows. And also the acceptance can flow to my own actions or thoughts. So I might have a thought that arises, like, I don't want this to be happening. So then, okay, then I bring that right here too. I see that. That is coming up. That I'm having a problem with this. And then if I have the chance to do something helpful to be a bodhisattva in the world, seeing that too. Seeing how that's coming up. And go ahead and do that. But that I do that action or that activity not out of hatred for the things that are happening and not even really trying to change them, just because it's the right thing for me to do, to be a bodhisattva in the world and to do that action. And so the impetus for that action is not out of hatred, it's out of intimacy. Just being really intimate with the people, the things, the activities. And because of this intimacy and love for the world and myself and all of the heartaches in myself and the world, then I may deeply feel the suffering and open my heart to compassion and also to equanimity so that there can be some lightness around the activity and my regard for it. So again, intimate with myself, intimate with my attachments that arise, intimate with my desire to end my own suffering and that of others, while at the same time cultivating a deeply rooted equanimity and willingness to be with what is, to actually be with what is right now, right here. Dogen says, because they are simply covered in acceptance, all these things, bodies, actions, and Buddhas, because they are simply covered in acceptance, through acceptance they are just dropped off. It doesn't say I drop them off. It says they are just dropped off. So all of these things become intimate with you. I also like that they become intimate with you.
Yeah.
You don't become intimate with them. So it's like letting them come. So there's some sort of going toward, because it does say grasp what's there and bring its working right here. So there's some going toward of seeing it, but then being with it. And then they become intimate with you. So all these things become intimate with you, and they become immersed in acceptance. And then through that, you're able to do your activity. So like if you're working for change, whether it's change in yourself, change in a relationship dynamic or habit pattern or change in the world, you're able to do that work and let go of attachment to the outcome. So that's really a different way of doing activity than kind of the normal way that we've been taught how to do activity. You know, you do the dishes so that there can be clean dishes, and then the kitchen is clean. We don't think about just doing the dishes as an activity and not attaching to that outcome of having a clean kitchen. But that's what Dogen is asking us to do. Because something could happen. You could be doing the dishes and then there's an earthquake. And the kitchen is destroyed. So attaching to outcomes, you know. And then would you say, well, that was a waste of time? You probably would in our usual mind. Like, well, that was a waste of time. But, you know, one day the world is going to end, right? I mean, sooner or later. Sooner or later, it could be a long time, it could be a really long time, but sooner or later, I mean, the sun is not going to last forever. The earth is not going to last forever. So we could say everything we're doing is just a waste of time. Yeah, right, mistake after mistake. So I think if we really look at impermanence, then we have to say, well, is it a waste of time? Or can I... Is there something? Are my actions really my only true companions? And do my actions reverberate throughout space and time? It's a question. If we are able to open to this, all things becoming intimate with us, and immersed in acceptance, and doing the activities without attaching to the outcomes, then the grasping also drops off, and the clinging to views drops off, and the burnout factor drops off. So we can get burned out, whether it's, you know, keeping a clean house, or whether it's, you know, cleaning up society, or, you know, we can get really burned out when we're working for good if we're attaching to the outcome. But when you're not attached to the outcomes, there's no burnout. You just can joyfully do the work for the work itself. I remember being at a retreat, it was a Thich Nhat Hanh retreat in Mississippi, and I was going through the dishes line, you know, doing my dishes, and I was kind of doing it with this sort of zen, what I thought of as this zen energy, like, you know, okay, going through this washing, you know, or sterilize, you know, anyway, there were different, you went here, scraped, and then washed, and then rinsed, and then another rinse, and, you know, like that, so kind of going down the line, and there was a nun that was, I think she was right behind me, and she sort of stopped me, and she said, why do we do the dishes? And I can't remember what I said, but I think it was like just to do the dishes, you know, like this sort of Zen way. She said, to practice our mindfulness. So both answers are right, but I think what she was picking up on was some my energy wasn't exactly just to do the dishes. It was getting them done. It was attachment to outcome. It was getting through the line because there's 100 people behind me, you know, which is valid, but you can get through the line still and practice your mindfulness. And so she could see that my energy was somewhere else. And if you practice like that, with that kind of energy of getting through the line, 100 people behind me, need to get done, you know, you burn out. Burn out. All right, what's this line about? The covered eye is the radiance of the 100 grass tips. So it might be helpful. The Nishijima and Cross translation says, do not be disturbed when the clear hundreds of things are restricted by the eye and not a single dharma is seen nor a single object is seen. So sometimes doesn't it seem like that to us? I mean, it does to me. I know, like, what am I doing here? Or, you know, am I even practicing? I can't see the Dharma. I can't see a single thing. So do not be disturbed. At this Dharma, the eye not seeing things, reality has already arrived. Yeah. And of course, this line, the radiance of 100 grass tips, which is in the Kaz translation, but not Nishijima and Cross, although grass does come up later. So I think it's on purpose that Kaz brings in this radiance of the 100 grass tips. So some of you know the story of Ling Zhao and the shining grasses. And for those who don't or don't remember, I'll tell it because it's one of my favorite of the family, the lay family Pong stories. So this is a story which, you know, Dogen could have been referring to. This was 500 years before Dogen, and this is a famous family, the Pong family, Layman Pong and his wife and daughter. So in this story, Layman Pong was sitting in his thatched cottage one day studying the sutras. Difficult, 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 he suddenly exclaimed. I really can identify with him mostly. Difficult, difficult, difficult. It's like trying to store 10 bushels of sesame seed in the top of a tree. And I heard once it's not just bushels, but like the sesame seeds themselves, not like wrapped up and trying to, that would be hard enough, but the little seeds and they keep falling down. Difficult. Sometimes it feels like that in practice, doesn't it? So he's like in the house saying this, and then his wife, lay woman Pong, I think she's in the other, she's probably in the kitchen. And she says, easy, easy, easy. It's like touching your feet to the floor when you get out of bed. So to me, that's this wonderful image of someone just sort of being in the radiance of her activity. But then, and I always imagine the story like this. I imagine Layman Pong in his study. So he's like studying the sutras. Laywoman Pong in the kitchen. She's like working. But then Ling Zhao is outside. She's in the garden or maybe playing their daughter. And she says, neither difficult nor easy. It's like the teachings of the ancestors shining on the 100 grass tips. That's why I imagine her outside, just looking around and seeing, oh, there's the dew shining on these grasses. It's right here. And it's not easy or difficult. So in that story, of course, 100 grasses is one of Zen symbols for all things or the whole phenomena of this and that. So it really does fit in with this passage where the covered eye doesn't see or sees the cover, if the covered eye doesn't see it, no problem, because the whole world of this and that is there. And Ling Zhao sort of beautifully brings this, not denying the truth of difficulty, which that there is a truth of difficulty, and also not denying the truth of easy, but seeing both of them from a really big view. And it's not like clinging to easy, which we want to do often, or pushing away difficult. It's just going back to the, what are the teachings? And so sometimes they're like the things that Layman Pong was studying, you know, in his, maybe he was studying the Four Noble Truths, or the truth of impermanence, truth of transformation. So those things are there. But in the end, they're beyond words. So that's where I think the seeing them shining on the 100 grass tips. And it also refers to that they're beyond words, that if you can't, even if you can't see them, they're still there. So even if you close your eyes, the shining grass tips are still there. So then there's this other reference to grass, and I'm going to read this part in the Nishijima and Cross. It's written more like a poem. So I'm going to read this section. If I leave through the gate, just grass. If I enter through the gate, just grass. For 10,000 miles, not an inch of grass. The word enter and the word leave are useless at this place and useless at that place. So you might recall, well, I said before about grass sort of representing all the things, the concrete phenomenal world and the 10,000 things. So there's that, but there's also that grass sometimes, since it says in the footnote, since it's attractive to oxen, it sometimes symbolizes that which distracts Buddhist practitioners from practice. So in other words, if I leave through the gate, here's a distraction. If I enter, here's a distraction. And yet, for 10,000 miles, there's not any distraction. It's no problem. Because reality in the present is neither entered nor left, so there's not leaving the gate or entering the gate. It's just here or not here in this case, not an inch of grass. Also, entering and leaving, so that as the passage goes on, it's clear that he's saying entering and leaving are merely apparitions of blossoms in the sky. And Joan told me once that sometimes when the ancient ones said it like that, blossoms in the sky, they were referring to cataracts. Because people who have cataracts see things that are like blossoms and it looks like they're in the sky, but really there's nothing there. I mean, there's nothing, you know, it's not what they think it is, I should say. So Dogen says, who would regard this apparition of blossoms in the sky as taking up a mistake and settling in with a mistake? So it's just the way you're seeing things and you can't help it. So if you have cataracts, you see blossoms. And we have our you know, our own version of cataracts. And we see something and we think that it's something in particular, but it's not what we think. You could say if you have cataracts and see blossoms, you're not taking up a mistake. Or you could say it's really all one big mistake. So he says stepping forward misses. Like making progress, stepping forward, you know, stepping backward misses. So in fundamental Christianity, they say backsliding you know, regressing in your spiritual practice. That misses too. I mean, that maybe is more obvious, but progress misses too. Taking one step misses, taking two steps misses, and so there are mistakes upon mistakes. And Dogen's death poem, he also refers to that. I can't remember exactly how it goes. Something like, was he 54, I think, when he died? So 54 years of being on this great earth, one big mistake, something like that. One big mistake. So here's something that Tigan Layton says about this passage. He says, "So this transformative function, this awesome dignified presence, is not a matter of doing the forms perfectly or being a perfect Zen student, whatever you might imagine that is, or being right according to some idea that you might have heard somewhere. It's simply mistake upon mistake. It's actually a vital process. We are actually alive." I talked about that. You said that before. We are actually alive. So we are alive, and so mistakes. And that's his poem. And like, okay, to be born is a mistake in a way. I mean, it's fine. It's a fine mistake, so it's no problem. That's the thing. It's no problem. But when we think about like oneness, boundless openness, then when there's birth, it separates. So, but it's one big mistake. And it's, isn't it wonderful? It's, we're really alive. It's vital. So the thing is, we see these mistakes and we see the gaps between what we think things should be and what they are, and we feel that it's a problem. But here's something that Dogen says in this passage, and I'm going to read the slightly different translation. "Because the separation is as great as that between heaven and earth, to arrive at the truth is without difficulty." I was really struck by this, especially the word because. Because the separation is as great as that between heaven and earth, to arrive at the truth is without difficulty. So it's like our mistakes have to be included. They have to be included. They're, it's predicated on the mistakes. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. So that's like radically a different way of thinking about mistakes. So the great truth is here because of our mistakes. Dogen also says in this section, again, this is from Nishijima and Cross, "We should utterly realize dignified behavior and behavioral dignity as, quote, the body in the great truth being relaxed." So that's like being with our mistakes. The body and the great truth being relaxed. And this is a reference to a line from Faith and Mind, which reads, "In the great truth, the body is relaxed. There is neither difficulty nor ease." So that also reminded me of Ling Zhao's answer about neither difficulty nor ease. In the great truth, the body is relaxed. Or Dogen says, the body. It starts with the body. It's kind of good. The body in the great truth being relaxed. So it's really important to relax our bodies in this practice. And so far into Sesshin, our bodies are tired, and maybe they're hurting, and maybe we're tensing up because of that. So remembering to relax and do the practice as you're able. I really liked one of Thich Nhat Hanh's senior monks when we were at Plum Village, he told us, "My practice is total relaxation." And when you think about it, that includes so many things. I mean, it's not like, okay, so I'm just going to sleep all day, but whatever he's doing, total relaxation. Listening to a teenager complaining about something, because I think he was one of the ones with the teens, if I'm remembering right, some of the time. Or, you know, being on the kitchen crew, or, you know, whatever he was doing. My practice is total relaxation. I was very inspired by that. And in total relaxation, we can open to the unhidden inclusive world that Dogen refers to here. So I'll read that part again. Understand that the awesome presence of the entire universe and the awesome presence of the entire world, as revealed by Buddhas and ancestors, are the unhidden inclusive world. This is not only the unhidden inclusive world, but the awesome presence within a single active Buddha. So this reminded me of the passage that we chant in Shakyamuni Buddha at noon. Even though mountains, rivers, and their myriad forms flourish in great abundance, none are left out of the eye of the Buddha. So that's the eye of the Buddha. E-I-E, E-Y-E. All of you here are also standing in the Buddha's eye. And I like that when we chant that, we're standing up. So standing in the Buddha's eye. And it is not that you are standing there. The eye is unfolded within you. So I think that's the same thing, because Dogen here is saying that, first of all, the awesome presence of the entire universe and the awesome presence of the entire world, as revealed by Buddhas and ancestors, are the unhidden inclusive world. So that's like going out. Unhidden inclusive world, the awesome presence. And then it says, but it's not only that, but this unhidden inclusive world also is within a single active Buddha somehow. And then we're all active Buddhas, so it's in us, so that the eye is enfolded in you. So we're standing in the eye, the Buddha's eye, and then also somehow eye is enfolded within us. So what is this unhidden inclusive world? So, of course, it's vast, but part of how we can access it is bringing what's there to us, seeing what's here. That's partly how we are involved in the activity of it being unhidden, seeing it, bringing out our patterns, our biases, our prejudices, bringing those to the surface, exposing ourselves to the things that we don't want to see about ourselves. And like if we're white in this country, it means exposing white privilege and white supremacy and seeing how that's playing out. Exposing the things we take for granted. You know, that's the kind of privilege piece, maybe, like, oh yeah, I should have this. And one thing that I'm doing now is I'm trying to expose our whitewashed history. I'm reading some history books that sort of have some other stories about things, or like finding out about Walt Whitman. And, you know, as people said on Sunday, and it's true, he had a lot of wonderful things to contribute. So it's not taking away that. And that many, many white people of his era were racist because that thought was so prevalent. But still, naming it, calling it out is important. And I'll just say, for, you know, I didn't really feel like I wanted to say this on Sunday because it would just, it hurt me. And I thought this could be a trigger for people to even hear, especially the people of color. But he said, he wrote something like, Negroes are little better than baboons. So, and this is the person who just loved all different bodies, and even he loved black people. He did, but he still thought that they were inferior. So, because that thought was pervasive. So, and to me, like, I'm finding, one more person and one more person, like someone that I thought was this great, sort of hero of history, and it's like, oh, and it's kind of similar with the, the sexual harassment stuff, like, bringing that out, and it's like, oh, okay. But it's so important to participate in the unhiddenness. So that's how we're participating in the unhiddenness. And when we're working with all of this, my question is, can we receive information which threatens our ideas about ourselves or our group? I'm not talking just about racism here. Just, can we receive information that threatens our ideas about who we are and who our group is? Can we do that with an open heart? So it's a question or an invitation we could ask ourselves. Can we open our hearts to the pain, our own pain, and the pain of others, without needing to defend or getting lost in shame? Just, it's there. Here it is. Bring it right here. And that really is our practice, that opening part. We say awakening the heart of great wisdom and compassion, or sometimes I hear people say opening. It's really the same. Awakening, opening the heart. Cultivating this open awareness so that our actions can flow from that. And then we participate in this beautiful dance, making mistakes and just being alive. Yeah.
It occurs to me, speaking about using the example of Walt Whitman, I think if we're going to be intimate with it, we also have to accept responsibility, personal responsibility.
Exactly, yeah.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry.
In this talking about Walt Whitman, to make it intimate, we have to accept responsibility and not make ourselves separate from it. So we have to be personally engaged in it as well.
Right.
The suffering of that comment, to totally hold it in our being,
mm-hmm.
I think is, so he, Walt Whitman's not out there.
Yep.
Well,
yeah, I am just like this.
I am just like this too.
And we come from that same culture.
Yep.
That's what we've been steeped in.
Right, exactly. So at the time, it was, the steeping was, sort of more juicy, I guess, and more strong, but it's still there. And yeah, to see that is really, thank you for bringing that up. That is really important.
So, for example, my group is the Zen group, so when people make disparaging remarks about Zen, then you can relate.
Yep.
Because now it's personal.
Yep.
Because that's our group.
Yeah. Anything else?
A really mundane comment.
All right.
The last day or so, I've done a lot of really intense work, and then the last yesterday or today, I keep falling asleep. So I thought, okay, so I'll practice with this. This mm-hmm. is what's here. Sleep is here.
Mm-hmm.
I am sleepy, and I woke up that I'm sleepy. But it's so, I still, that thought, so there, what the hell am I getting out of this? Why am I just sitting here? And every like few seconds, I'm falling asleep. Mm-hmm. I'm dozing off, and I keep trying to catch it.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I'm right here with dealing with it. I don't feel like I've been successful so far. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm thinking about it the wrong way, but I just can't quite let go.
Because you're attaching to an outcome that says I should not be sleepy,
or that sleep is. That sensation is bad.
Yeah.
It's not good practice.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
How can I become awake if I'm dozing off and dreaming? Or right between a bell, the first bell and the second bell, bingo, I slipped off to sleep again. And I do have a lot, you can hear it in my voice, I have a lot of judgment about it. How to open to that's also it, and that's the mistake, and that's...
Yeah, why don't you just do at least one period where you just let yourself sleep?
Go to sleep.
While I'm sitting?
Yeah.
Yes. Sleeping Buddha.
Oh, see, I used to not fight it, and this time I'm really trying to fight it. It's like I'm not wasting a 1,000 periods sleeping.
Well, sometimes that kind of energy is helpful.
Just let it go.
But it sounds like in this case, I would say, at least try it. For just do a period and say, I am just going to sleep this period. And then see what happens. And perhaps one other thing would be, you might decide, actually, my body is, I know you've have a lot coming up health-wise. Mm-hmm. So, maybe you do go and actually lie down for a period. That's another thing. But it might be... there might be some insight that comes up if you actually do a sitting period and just say, I'm just going to sleep.
I think that's the button right there.
So there's a lot of fairy tales where the main character is given something and they have to take it somewhere. And they say, whatever you do, don't fall asleep. Whatever you do, just don't fall asleep. And then they fall asleep. And then all this stuff unfolds because of their mistake.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I find that kind of comforting sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
We don't really know.
We don't
what's
know.
Happening.
Yeah, what's happening in our zazen is none of our business.
Yeah.
So. And, different other people might be at a place in practice where having that kind of energy of not exactly fighting sleep, but noticing, sort of that, sometimes that's where that's helpful. But it's, anyway, there's not one way.
Think of Leaves of Grass and Walt Whitman and his idea that and Dogen's idea that if we're enlightened, we are awakened to a myriad of things,
mm-hmm.
and that's like grass, it mm-hmm. looks like it's all the same. If you get close to it, it's all different.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think Whitman, who wrote Leaves of Grass, mm-hmm. would have been surprised to have that comment of his probably thrown off in a battle situation. Where he was a nurse trying to save life, that comment is what has survived him to this point in his life.
Mm.
That's surprising to think about that. I mean, all the idiotic things we say and
right.
the one,
yeah,
it's a nerve in the 21st century, and it's what comes out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That really points to how our actions reverberate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, if he were alive today, I think he probably would be really working on undoing racism. I do. So, I think that is true. Anyway, we're out of time, so thank you so much.
Intention equally penetrate every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.